Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, you've reached Nature Now for the week that is going to bring us a summer, officially starting on Sunday, June 20th. And oh, are we ready? After an unexpectedly wet and dreary 2 weeks of June, we're greeting the sun now with cheer. It's time to appreciate the returning warmth, and the ocean spray shrubs are in bud, so we know we're approaching July. So we're going to start with our mystery sound. This is a bird. It has a very interesting approach to sound, and we'll be telling a bit of a story about it at the end. Today, we are going to talk again with Gary Bullock. He retired to SQUIM from a 37-year career of firefighting, mostly in Alaska. I met Gary in a class on natural history writing. He explores using sculpture, painting, and words. He's an avid observer and a lover of nature, and especially birds. When our life opens up a little bit more, he'll be back to leading bird watching tours for the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Mary.
I thought we would start because we're going to talk about what people can see with birds in the summertime, and I think include some things that people don't know about birds they think they already understand. How does the summer season make bird watching different?
Well, when we're out looking for birds in the spring, we're easily spoiled. The deciduous trees and bushes are all bare. There's very little underbrush in the woods, and even the brambles don't hide much. Birds are easy to find, and the slightest movement is detectable, and there are a few places for them to hide. Contrast that to right now, to June. The woods, trails, and brambles are lush with greenery, blossoms, and even some developing fruit. There are many more bird species around us, but they're more difficult to find. Movement in the trees is more likely a leaf fluttering in the wind. We're in the middle of nesting season right now, and while some male birds are out in the open vocally proclaiming territory, the females are secretive on their nests or hiding with nestlings in the brushy edges. When we do spot a bird up in the understory, it usually doesn't sit still. They're foraging for insects, darting around quickly, only briefly in view. There always seems to be a branch or a leaf blocking the distinguishing features of the bird I'm trying to identify.
And Gary, there are some of us who are very nearsighted, which I am, and I have often found that when I see something moving and somebody says, "Oh, good, there's a robin," by the time I find the tree, the bird has left. In addition to the hard part of seeing the bird, we're doing a lot of listening in the summertime.
That's true. We have to listen intently for the songs and calls. We're more likely now to hear many of our summer residents than to see them. Some of the birds are loud and boisterous. Others, like most of the warblers, have quiet or high-pitched songs, and they're difficult to hear if you aren't listening or attentive. Or if you're getting older like me and have hearing loss, warblers, vireos, flycatchers, and kinglets have to be very close to be heard. Sometimes watching through binoculars or a spotting scope as a perched bird sings, I can focus in on the sounds with both sight and sound, making it easy to pick out those harder to hear bird songs.
I'll be a beginner with birds for all of my life. And it seems to me that you need to have practiced to listen to the bird song before you can identify the bird. Which comes first? I mean, you've got to really get into listening to something you already are familiar with.
It's best to start out with simple birds, the common birds, and work up from there. Some of the bird songs, it's been 8 months or a year since you last heard them, or maybe you're new to birding and never heard them before. So some are hard to remember. There are a lot that are hard to differentiate between them. But there's a large variety of bird apps available, either for free or inexpensive. And they have range maps, they have recordings of bird songs, they have photos, habitat preferences, and life histories. So you can bone up on your birds at home or wherever you are on your commute or whatever. Some of them, the apps that are available are iBird, Merlin Bird ID, All About Birds from Cornell, and the Audubon Bird Guide.
All of those are really useful. And what we're going to do today is talk about some commonly observed birds for this time of year. And some of these birds are birds that we all think we know something about. But as I said, we're going to look into them with a little more depth. We are not doing water birds. And the reason we are not is because of the layout of the home area that Gary walks in most often. So can you describe that a little bit?
Well, we have 4 acres. We're kind of rural and out of 5 miles out of Sequim. And we have about 20 nest boxes around our property that we've built and put up. Most of the time, most years, they're about 40 to 50% occupied. Most of them are swallow boxes. We have a couple nesting shelves and a couple owl boxes. With the owl boxes, haven't had any luck so far with owls, just squirrels and wasps.
And that's not what you're looking for at all, right?
No, wow. Not really. Tree and violet green swallows are the most common in the nest boxes, but those swallow boxes are also used by chickadees, house wrens, breasted nuthatches, and Douglas squirrels.
Is it the size of the aperture that the bird can enter that defines what kind of bird uses that box?
Yes, and it's important to have the right size opening for the bird you're trying to attract. Of course, smaller birds can get in the same hole as your target bird, but most of the smaller birds are good birds to have around anyway.
Well, except that if the hole is too big, a predator might be able to get in.
That's true. And that's a problem with squirrels. Sometimes they chew out the hole bigger so they can get in and out.
Squirrels, I honestly, if they had opposable thumbs, we'd all be out of trouble or in trouble. You said you had a northern flying squirrel?
We've seen them several times over the 9 years we've been here. They're nocturnal, so they're out at night. And when I'm out for a walk with the dog before dark, I have a headlamp, and sometimes I'll see them, you know, gliding across the open spaces in the trees. And this winter and spring, there was a flying squirrel that was occupying one of our nest boxes. It was right in the woods.
And at that point, they will then go ahead and have their families right in your nest box?
It's possible. This one didn't. They have a large territory, and they'll make rounds of the territory and have roosting sites at several places in their territory. So this nest box was just a place where it would spend the night. It didn't actually roost or have a nest there.
It's sort of your Airbnb for birds, and
correct,
a squirrel is in it. Okay, even though I know you often travel, particularly around the peninsula, to look at birds, we're going to talk about things that you see in your home range and a few individual birds. The first being the robin, and everybody says, oh, wow, that's so common. This might be a child's first bird to identify because it's everywhere. But I hear what I think is a robin in early dawn before sunrise, maybe like 4:30 in the morning. Is that likely to be a robin?
Most likely. They're usually the first one that starts singing in the spring and through May and June. I'll hear them sometimes between 3 and 4 a.m. hours before sunrise.
Are they just out there practicing, or is it, that's, it's interesting that they are certainly the first. And sometimes it's quieter right now, at least in now on the edge of the woods I live near. But the robins really start the day as far as I'm concerned. What else is there that intrigues people about robins? I know they're in the thrush family, which means they have beautiful songs. They live here year round. How do they nest and where?
They'll nest in the fork of a branch in a tree, any place they have some cover. They'll nest on top of a downspout, a curve on your gutter downspout. They'll nest in your clematis vine underneath the eaves. And I've built some nesting shelves that are three-sided. They're open in the front, and put them up under the eaves, and they'll nest in those.
My gosh. Do the swallows also use those?
No, because they're open.
The
swallows are cavity nesters. They like to go into a hole where they're protected and out of sight.
Is there anything else we want to add to thinking about robins while we're on that particular bird?
Well, the robins that we have now that are nesting here are probably not the same robins that we have in the wintertime.
Oh,
they
really?
They do migrate somewhat, and our summer robins are probably wintering in California or Nevada or Arizona.
For heaven's sake. So migration is going on.
They migrate, and especially in about April, there's just a whole lot of robins coming through, and you'll see real bright ones and real plain colored ones all moving north.
And the ones that stay here in the winter also just spend the summer here without going in. I mean, are they like the Canada geese and they're just here all the time?
The ones that are here in the winter probably summered further north in Canada or maybe even Alaska.
For heaven's sake, I am intensely amazed at all points by migration of birds, because it seems completely incredible that something that small can go several thousand miles and make it. So another bird that you mentioned seeing was the black-headed grosbeak. I have never seen one. And I wonder if you could say a little bit more about it. They're here now, right?
Right. They're summer residents here. They winter in Mexico. They're a pretty smart bird, actually. Their song is quite similar to the robin's, but it's sweeter, faster in tempo, and it has some harsh slurs and buzzes thrown in.
Okay. And you said that we don't see them in spite of the fact that this is a very showy bird. It's quite bright colored.
Right. They're orange and white and black, and they're a beautiful bird, and they'll sing from the top of a tree, but even with those colors, they blend in with the leaves almost like camouflage.
Uh-huh.
And we're more likely to hear them than see them. Even if I hear one and know which tree it's in, it's hard to find them a lot of times.
Especially, I imagine, in sunlight where there's shadow and light picking up the colors and kind of tucking them in.
Right.
Now I know to look more closely at the tops of trees that are singing. Okay. We talked a bit about Wilson's warbler. Warblers fascinate a lot of us. And that's one we see in the summer, yes?
Correct. They're also neotropical migrants. They're coming from Mexico or Central America where they winter. And they're a beautiful bright yellow bird with a black cap on top. And the wings are kind of light olive color, but they look yellow overall. And again, they're very hard to see in the underbrush. They're in the along the edges of the forest and the rivers in the brush. And they sing with a series of chit notes, kind of chit-chit-chit-chit-chit-chit. And flit among the edges, but most of the time we hear them and don't see them.
Uh-huh. And then they obviously produce their young and migrate out when, September or so?
They're probably leaving by mid-August to late August, heading south.
get. Well, one of the other things that we talked about was how quickly a bird that has migrated in needs to find its mate, make a nest, produce some eggs, and then produce fledglings and have those ready to leave when they have to migrate. That is amazing.
Yeah, one bird that is really amazing in that regard is an alder flycatcher. They're not common around here, but they frequented Anchorage and Alaska when I was there in the summers. And they usually didn't arrive till the very last week in May. And they show up in the wilder and alder brush and streamside habitat. But what really amazes me about them is they come from Central America and Northern South America. And they migrate 5,000 miles to Canada and Alaska to breed. And from the time they arrive at the end of May, they establish territory, breed, nest, and raise their young in just 6 weeks' time, and then they're heading south again.
There's nothing you can say about that. It just feels as if it would be completely impossible. Hello, the impossible just takes 6 weeks. We're going to do it. The thing that's astonishing also is that they have such a long migration. You'd think they would just sort of stop off in Palo Alto or somewhere and say, hey, we're not going any farther. So bless them all. But 6 weeks means that the fledglings must have a very short time to learn to fly and get strong enough to leave.
Actually, yes, because they're close to 2 weeks incubation and 2 weeks to get to fledgling stage where they can leave the nest. So there's only at that point 2 more weeks for them to gain their strength and bearings and head south.
Do they generally eat insects?
Yes. Yes. Most of the warblers and the flycatchers are insect eaters. They will eat fruit in their winter range, but most of the time what we see is insect eaters.
So in a place where you might be getting a profusion of summer insects, they have a chance to get enough protein to bulk up and get ready to go. But it's really amazing. Well, another bird that we know and might even want to know more about is the raven. There's been a lot of people who have written about ravens, lots of studies. I see one pair. I don't know if it's the same pair every year, but I never see more than two at a time. And they're obviously a pair because they're conversing. You said you had seen some young ones learning to make raven talk.
Yeah, down along the Dungeness River, there's an area where I'm sure there's a nest back in the woods. And I hear the adults and see the adults chasing off eagles and red-tailed hawks that fly over the area, and they'll come flying up at the hawk with making a ca 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 sound and chase them off and out of the area because they're afraid they're going to get their nestlings. Uh-huh. But the last week there were three nestling or fledged ravens on a log along the river, and they were just sitting there begging to be fed with their off-tune caw calls. They're higher pitched and kind of squeaky, and they don't quite sound like the adults, but they're looking for food.
I've never seen a raven fledgling. I mean, as I said, I know that there's a pair here, but they're very careful about not letting the whole family out at one time. At least that's been what I've seen. You see essentially one family, like two adults and their young, but ravens don't tend to hang around in flocks.
Not normally, unless they find an intruder like an owl or an eagle in the area, and then they'll mob them. They'll all gang up on them and try and chase them off. But once the youngsters get to the point where they're flying and everything, they're pretty self-reliant. The parents are there to help them feed, but they're out in the open, and they don't worry about that too much.
And then by the time you get to cold weather, the young ones are grown enough to be completely self-sufficient, yes?
Oh, yeah. And even now, you know, a couple of weeks out of the nest, they're the same size as the adults. The only way to tell it is they have a red kind of in the gape of their beak. You can see some red in there if you have binoculars.
That is, they open the beak and say, feed me, sort of red.
Right.
Another bird that we had mentioned seeing regularly is the red-breasted nuthatch. And I love these because they're so tidy and they're so well-dressed and they seem to be quite busy. So you have noted them often?
We have a pair that's nested in a hawthorn stump of ours for the past 2 years. And they excavated the hole themselves. And last year they had 3 broods in there. And this year they're on the 2nd brood already.
For heaven's sake. Then the young are then strong enough to leave and they mate again and start over.
Right. And robins do the same thing. Robins will have sometimes 2 or 3 broods in a summer. And they'll use a different nest every time. The robins will.
But in this case, the nuthatch has sort of excavated a soft part of a log.
Yeah, they excavate a hole and a cavity inside a tree like a woodpecker does. And they've got, that's their nesting cavity, kind of like their nesting box.
Uh-huh. And at this point, they are then prepared to let their fledglings go and yet spend the winter here.
Yes, the nuthatches don't migrate. They stay here year round.
Are they sometimes associated with seeing chickadees in the same place?
Oh yeah, chickadees, nuthatches, brown creepers. You'll see all of those in the same area. And they're all resident birds here for the year.
I wanted to make sure that we update on the progress of the Audubon Center at Dungeness at the Railroad Bridge. They've been working on that for quite a while, and it's progressing enough, so eventually we'll be able to get back, yes?
Yeah, it's scheduled to reopen fall of this year. They added 5,500 square feet, and construction is going really well, and it's going to be just an awesome place to learn about birds and view birds when they get it done.
Well, there's been a lot of community involvement in that, and it's the land belongs to the tribe, yes?
Right. The Skalum tribe owns the land, and it's a cooperative effort with the tribe, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society, the River Center Foundation, and Audubon Washington.
Wow. Well, we are going to, I wish we didn't have to wind up, but we do, and I think we will end by identifying the mystery sound. Which is a common nighthawk, although it is a bird of dawn and dusk, and it is not related to hawks. But Gary, you've got a story about one, and we'll close with that.
Okay. A week ago, my dog Robin and I walked down to the river bridge for sunset, and our goal was to hopefully see nighthawks for the first time this year, and it was a successful venture. We looked through hundreds of swallows and didn't even see one black or Vaux's swift. And after the sunset, we're ready to head home because it was getting dark. Right then, 2 common nighthawks appeared at the treetops over the river. They've got long, crooked, pointed wings with a wide white stripe from front to back. And they're much larger than swallows, and they have a bouncy, buoyant flight. So it's always neat to see those. And I've been back 2 more evenings in the past week, and I've seen up to 4 nighthawks at once over the river. They hunt morning and evening, right around sunrise and sunset.
Again, they're hunting insects, yes?
Right. And they come all the way from South America to breed here.
Wow. This is such a wonderful bird area, and I'm glad that you are here to help us learn more about them. Thank you, Gary. This is always entertaining and informative. I appreciate it so much. That's our show for Nature Now as summer arrives. Thanks to Gary Bullock and Nora Petrick for bringing this show to life. Our music is Rockin' Robin by Bobby Day, and that comes from the dim time of 1962. I'll bet you some of you remember that. So listen for Nature Now on Wednesdays at noon, on Thursdays and Saturdays. But best of all, find our show on KPTZ Podcasts. And thanks for listening.
He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a bopping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin. Rockin' Robin, cause we really gonna rock up tonight. Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tall oak tree, the wise old owl, the big black crow, flap of their wings, sing and go, bird, go. Rockin' Robin, rock, rock, rockin' Robin. Go, rockin' Robin, cause we really gonna rock up tonight. And it was grand. They started going steady, and bless my soul, he out popped the buzzard and the Oreo. He rocks in the treetop all the day long, popping and a popping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Blow, rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight. Tweet, tweet, rock. Well, the pretty little raven at the birdman stand taught him how to do the bop, and it was grand. They started going steady, and bless my soul, he out-bopped the buzzard and the Oreo. He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a-bopping and a-singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street talk to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin. Oh, rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight.
Dungeness River Nature Center is proud to support KPTZ programming like Nature Now. In memory of Dee and Beverly Swearingen, who taught their children and grandchildren the love and stewardship of nature. Dungeness River Nature Center, teaching generations about nature on the Olympic Peninsula at Railroad Bridge Park in Squim. More at DungenessRiverCenter.org.
Dungeness River Nature Center is pleased to support KPTZ programming like Nature Now. In memory of Dee and Beverly Swearingen, who taught their children and grandchildren the love and stewardship of nature. Dungeness River Nature Center, teaching generations about nature on the Olympic Peninsula at Railroad Bridge Park in Squim. More at DungenessRiverCenter.org.